Hello, and welcome to the Green Minds podcast.
Showcasing the science, stories, and solutions behind climate change with Phoebe Scott,
Alex Miller,
Lottie Flashkus,
and Guy Wilkinson.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the IB Green Minds podcast. My name is Phoebe Scott, and this week I'm joined by Tom McGillicuddy. Tom is the co-founder of Ticker, an investment app launched in 2019 that lets you invest in companies making a positive impact, and it can also help you to offset your carbon footprint. Founded on the principles of accessibility, education, and community, Ticker's intention is to redesign the investment management industry, making it sustainable for customers and the world, with a particular focus on engaging with first-time investors. Prior to Ticker, Tom spent 8 years in the investment management industry at Barclays and Wellington Investment Management. Tom, thank you so much for joining me on the Green Minds podcast today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Great. So I thought it would be a good place to start off by talking about your career to date. How do you think that your time spent in the investment management industry has helped you to get to where you are today with Ticker?
Yeah, it goes back to the first lesson and the first foundation that Ticker's built on, which is accessibility. It goes back to my time when I first started in the industry. The other founder of the business, Matt Latham, and I started at Barclays on the same day. And we quickly started to realize, we didn't come from an investment background, we didn't come from a finance background. And we quickly started to realize that the way the industry had been set up with all the jargon, it seemed to have been designed to confuse people. And we started to think that there was a huge financial inclusion issue because normal people couldn't get access to the financial tools that they needed to provide for the future. And that started to become a real problem for us. And that was the first kind of pain point. 2010-11 when Matt and I started together. And then as I spent more time in the industry, I started to become a little bit disillusioned with what I was doing, and issues like the climate and other social issues started to become very important to me. And I was trying to find ways to combine what I was doing with in my day job with my personal values and the way I wanted to see the world. And then I stumbled across impact investing, and it proved to me that you can combine both. You can combine the desire to positively impact the world and the desire to generate financial returns. And so Matt and I got together and started thinking about ways in which we can combine the two. And as we were working on the original idea that became Ticker, and we started to talk to more people about the thing that we were working on, the more people we talked to from outside of finance who'd never invested before, the more the idea resonated with them, which was to, in a very, very straightforward and simple and jargon-free way, get people to invest for the first time, using like impact as the feel-good hook. And we think combining the accessibility factor and positive impact is the way to drive behavior change from people that have never invested before, because it means something to them, they can understand it, they have a personal connection with it, and that helps them to establish a long-term habit. We've talked in the past about Ticker being like instant gratification long-term. So you get the gratification from the positive impact and the companies and the stories, and that helps you establish a long-term sustainable behavior for yourself, which is investing, so which is good for the individual and good for the world. So those areas of my career, the desire to build a tool that's accessible and the desire to have a positive impact, form the foundations of what Matt and I built with Ticker.
I think it's definitely a theme in the sustainable investment industry that's touched upon again and again, this concept of combining profitability and sustainability. And you don't have to negate one for the other, which has been historically argued as a counter argument as to why you should integrate impact. But definitely from a bottom-up perspective, getting retail investors interested in it is obviously what you guys have done really well, and it's really interesting. And it would be great just to touch upon what the process was like to get Ticker up and running. So when you first discussed the idea with your co-founder Matt to actually launching the app itself.
Yeah, it's a long and hard process, that, because we got the original text message where Matt sent me the outline of why don't we work on this idea. From that point to the point of leaving our jobs, that was 2 years, because when we agreed to embark on this journey, we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into, really. And whilst we were experienced investment managers, we didn't necessarily know how to start an investment management app from scratch ourselves, considering all the areas of like custody, payments, trading. We were kind of comfortable with portfolio creation and investment, but then app design, user experience, all the technology elements that we needed to do. So there was a long journey of education, trial and error, peaks and troughs, moments where it felt like we were never going to get anywhere. We were never going to get off the ground. A lot of times we were very close to giving up, and weeks went by when nothing happened. And then over time, we learned more about what we needed to do, and that created momentum. And it got to a point where we could only do so much on the side of our day jobs. You know, Matt was still working at Barclays, I was at Wellington. We had demanding day jobs. So it was time to either do it or not do it. And I think we would have massively regretted it. It came down to, we're going to regret this decision if we don't do it. You know, Wellington and Barclays will always be there to an extent, and they'll probably welcome us back. But we've only got one opportunity to do this, because if we don't do it, someone else will. And that was the real fear that drove us to actually do it in the end, was the fact that we thought this was a good idea. We thought the industry was only going in one direction. This was like 2016, 17, where it was nowhere near as popular as it is today. And it felt like we were really sticking our neck out to put a bet on it. But it just felt right to us. It felt like we were doing something that was true to us and what we believed we were passionate about. And the trend just continued to increase in strength. So we decided to take the plunge and go for it. So after that moment, then it was a case of, can we raise the funds to build the first version of Ticker? Because we self-funded it for a period of time, but we had to build a fully regulated investment management business from scratch. And that requires regulation and a lot of cost. Because if you're an FCA regulated business, which we are, you can't just test the product. Like if you had a cake store, you can bake a cake and go and sell it at a market. Whereas we have to get regulated first. There's all these checks and balances that we need to go through before we can even test that one person wants to use it. So there's a big bet on that moment, and we needed to raise money for it. So that first summer when we left our jobs, we spent, and it was like a heat wave in London, I remember it. We were pounding around the pavements trying to raise money, going from meeting to meeting to meeting across London. And we managed to raise enough to get the first version off the ground, and then it went from there. We built the team, we raised more money, we improved the product, we scaled the marketing, and then it started to come together. But it was a good two and a half year process of trial and error and real hard work to get it to that point. And now, you know, we're in a good position. The team's 24 people, expanding quite rapidly. We've raised good funding from some great investors, and there's a trajectory there to real scale. But it took a lot of hard work to get to that point.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, you definitely jumped on that green wave at the right time, really, because it's only grown since then. I was just interested in terms of backers. Was there anyone in particular that really bought your story early on and was a key help for you in setting up Ticker officially with the funding?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the original round of funding that we raised, you know, Matt and I were not from wealthy backgrounds. We're not heavily connected with family money. So none of that really existed. We had some extended family money, and who introduced us to another angel that brought in a first couple of checks, which was, you know, amazingly grateful. And then when we left our jobs, a lot of the people, senior people at Wellington and Barclays, invested with their personal money to get us off the ground. But the biggest amount of early transformational capital came from a family office in the Netherlands that I'd met when I was doing the impact investment course at Oxford University. I'd met them there, and then once I'd left Wellington to start Ticker, they got in contact and seen what I was doing, and then we entered into a DD process with them, and they've invested in us like two or three times subsequently. So they were the first sizable bit of transformational capital we had. They were super helpful. Another big help was a few of our early advisors who, whilst they didn't invest, you know, colossal amounts like the family office in the business, just sharing their lessons. And one of our advisors, a guy called Mark Cunningham, he's, you know, a serial entrepreneur. He's made every mistake a million times. He's technical and commercial, so he's both sides of the coin. So whenever we have a major problem, we ring him, and he's super helpful. He was transformational, especially in that first year, getting us off the ground.
That's great, and I'm sure you can attest to the value of these individuals and helping to get it off the ground. You could argue that impact investing drives impact investing, because they think they're making impact in investing in you, and you want to drive impact in the wider community. So that's hopefully the opposite of a vicious circle, a positive circle. Just touching on Ticker's themes, which is impact investing, as you mentioned, it's grown in popularity and recognition immensely over the past decade. Lots of other terms we've kind of seen more popping up, such as sustainable investing, ESG investing, and also positive investing, for example. How would you differentiate Ticker's focus compared to these other terms?
So yeah, the unfortunate thing for the sector is that there's a lot of terms used interchangeably that actually mean different things. So there's ethical and responsible investing, which is like the first version of this, which is about screening out bad companies. And then the next wave after that was ESG investing, environmental, social and governance, which in reality is about assessing whether a company is exposed to those three things as risk factors to their stock price. So for example, somebody with a bad E score would be exposed to certain environmental factors, i.e. they're a coal plant, for example. And that is deemed to be potentially negative to their future stock price because coal's being weaned away from, or it could be regulated against. ESG says nothing about the underlying impact of the investments. And it's kind of like entry level stuff to impact. So it's very, very different to impact. And then you have impact investing, which is from a completely different starting point. And it's about identifying companies around the world that are great investments, but the company's products and services are intentionally trying to create a positive impact in the world. And that's where we sit with our investments. We're trying to find companies all around the world that have 100% of their revenue from a very, very clear impact theme, and a theme that we think is a contributing solutions to a big problem that the world's facing. And if it's not 100% of the revenue, then as much as possible. And the rest can't be from like a red flag area, an area that we don't want to get exposure to. So they're all different. They can be used together. So for example, we start from a point of view of impact, but we screen out companies that we'll never go anywhere near, you know, sectors that we don't want to get any exposure to. And we can overlay ESG criteria after. So ESG really is, the way we think about it, is it's whether a company is a good corporate citizen or not. That's why you'll see Coca-Cola, HSBC, companies like that in ESG funds, because all it means is the company well run? Is it a good corporate citizen? And those companies tend to be. But the products and services they're selling aren't solving any world problem. So we can do the world problem bit, assess that, then see if they're a good corporate citizen. And in the process of creating our themes, we can make sure we screen out any sectors that we want to avoid as well. So we do a bit of each, but the main driver for us is impact.
Thanks, that was really clear and helpful, definitely, to differentiate. It can sometimes feel like a very congested landscape in terms of different terms that you feel basically mean the same thing, but as you've shown, they don't entirely match up. Touching again on this wider impact investment space and Ticker's place in the space, how do you see Ticker and the space expanding in the next 5 to 10 years? Do you anticipate any major challenges?
Yeah, good question. I see our role specifically as engaging a high number of individuals to do this for the first time. So I think the role that we play in the ecosystem initially is by amplifying it as an area of interest to people that would never have looked at it otherwise. So if we can scale to 5-10 million customers in Europe and get everyone of the, so 90% of those customers that have never invested before, we've created like a new behavior. We've created a new awareness to what to do with your money and how to be impactful with your money. That's our role in the ecosystem, I think. And then in doing that, we can drive, obviously, underlying investment to positive companies. And we can get people to think more consciously about the consumerism and expenditure, because investing is a buying decision, ultimately. And the way you align your money should reflect what how you want to see the world. And one of the biggest things our generation and the generation above and below can do collectively is align our savings, pensions, etc. with the companies that we see building the future that we want to live in and want our children to live in. So I think in getting people to engage in it for the first time and creating an amazing product experience around that, we can drive real underlying change in the world. And I think more broadly outside of us specifically, I think in doing that and other people playing their own roles in the industry, I think impact investing in 10 years time will just be called investing. I think in the same way that once upon a time, the only lens that people looked through for investments was return. And then risk got added on because you need to balance out the two. And then I think now we're starting to see the third dimension properly establish itself, which is impact. So in 10 years time, there will be a risk return impact matrix that everyone looks at their investments through. It'll just be the de facto way that everyone invests in the world. That's my hope and prediction.
Thanks. That's really fascinating. I think you're probably right there. It's become a normal part of how everyone looks at their investments. And now I just thought it'd be interesting to touch upon Ticker's target market, which you briefly mentioned before. Obviously, a big point for you is engaging first-time investors, and 90% of your app users are first-time investors. Why is this such a key target for you?
It's a good question. I think there's two elements to it. The first element of it is, in Europe especially, our generation, the one above and the one below, 8 or 9 out of 10 of them have not invested. So it's the bulk of our generation. So it's the biggest market. So if we can crack that, there's a big company to be built around it. And we're not just trying to build a big company for the sake of it. We're trying to build a big company because as we get bigger, our impact is larger and magnified. So we have more impact. The bigger the platform gets, the more customers, the more assets. And that ties itself into acquiring the biggest demographic. That's one reason. The other reason really, and it's related to accessibility, is 80-90% of our generation above and below in Europe haven't invested before. And I think that is a financial inclusion problem, because I think if people can learn good, sustainable in the long-term sense, investment behaviors, then it's good for them and good for their future. And they can help provide for their future and their retirement and their families in 10, 20 and 30 years time. And I think it's part of our responsibility as a company to kind of teach people the language of proper investing, teach them proper investment principles that will stand them in good stead for 10, 20, 30 years in the future, i.e. not short-term trading, not buying in and out of stocks, not doing anything fancy on that, but just good, solid principles that stand the test of time. And I think that's why we want to acquire and reach out to that demographic. So they're a big demographic, which is important for building a big business around. But there's a big financial inclusion element of what we're doing, which is, can we build a product for a demographic that have been overlooked and help them provide for the future? So those two things underpin why we focus on that demographic.
Thank you. And you said you think that people in their early 20s, like mid to late 20s also, are overlooked. Do you also think that they're not just overlooked, they don't care as much? What's the opposite argument to that? Do you think it's a problem of engagement?
I genuinely think up until now, there hasn't been many attempts from the investment management industry to actually build products for first-time investors. So they've been put off by every other offering. And I think even certain products that said they were for, you know, they were jargon-free and accessible, in reality are not. And underneath, they're just the same old generic finance products that are opaque and invest in companies that they don't want you to engage with because they don't want to know where you're investing. So we flip it on its head and we're the opposite. We actually build it from first principles for first-time investors. 90% of our team at Ticker are not from the investment management industry. So the product itself has been designed by first-time investors with obviously Matt and me and a few other people feeding in the expertise on the investment side. So that's super important for us for product integrity. And I think what we've seen so far is it's not that people who've never invested before are apathetic to it and that they don't want to do it. It's that they've never felt comfortable doing it because of what's out there already. They've downloaded a trading app and been put off by it and never come back. When we used to, this is obviously pre-COVID, we used to host two events a month at our office and used to get like 150, 200 customers down in our office. And we'd teach them about investment principles and we'd teach them about impact investing. And people would turn up with notepads like they were attending lectures because they really wanted to know this stuff, but they hadn't really found any company or app that they trusted prior, which is amazing to me because it's not amazing and it is amazing because we've been saying all along, the current offering is not engaging or designed for these people because it's being designed by people who are not that. So there's a real big opportunity to capture a market. And in doing so, it's a very positive financial inclusion problem solved or some way to go and solve. So I don't think they're not interested. I just don't think anything's been designed for them properly in the past.
You made some very valid points there. And I agree, definitely thinking about people who are my age, I don't think many of them do have a lot of investment accounts, but it's not necessarily because they don't care. They just maybe don't really know where to look. We've always mentioned their age point as well. It's been widely discussed that we're in the biggest intergenerational wealth transfer in history, and millennials are inheriting so much wealth. And Ticker's not a charity, it is a business. So surely you saw this as a financial opportunity also.
Absolutely. So my and Matt's kind of ethos and the way we think about the world is one of the real reasons I got into impact investing was because I think there's a time and a, I think there's a place for charity, and I'm a supporter of charities, and I think they're great and they're amazing at solving specific problems. But I think if you can start businesses in and around these big problems and have them as for profit and they are generating profit, they can then raise capital and scale and become very, very efficient and large in ways that charities can't. So I actually think that it's now becoming, if you think about an example of this, is like the UN Sustainable Development Goals for 2030. I can't remember the exact number, but it's like they estimate it will require $30 trillion worth of cash to go to solving those problems in the way that they want them to be solved. That can't be done just by charities and government. The bulk of it has to come from the private sector. So how do we think about business in a different way? How do we think about business with, yes, a profit motive, but a profit from an impactful cause? There's nothing wrong with profit inherently. It's where we're getting it from and how the business is being conducted. So that's what I learned from my time thinking about impact investing and when I was working in impact investing. And I saw it working over and over again in the companies that I invested in when I was at Wellington Management. They were companies with an impact DNA and the vision was very impactful, but they'd figured out a way to turn this into a for-profit business that can scale. And I think that is the way that we see our business. I think we can have more of an impact as a for-profit, scalable business that can acquire the necessary amount of customers fast and give them an engaging, impactful product. I think we can do that more so with our current for-profit structure than we could in any other way. So I'm a big, big proponent of capitalism, but it being nudged in the right direction. And I think if it is nudged in the right direction and we keep seeing companies come out over and over again that are examples, and I think if impact investing can become just investing in the future, I think we can see capital markets become hyper-efficient at solving the problems that we care about. So that's kind of our ethos and how we think about our business.
Thanks, that's really interesting. And just diving into how Ticker kind of works for the customer. So it's subset into different impact themes.
The themes that we have are people, planet, and then people and planet together. We originally had some other themes that were roughly in those areas, but we've just kind of redesigned them and refreshed some of the portfolios and made the names of them a little bit simpler. So really what we're trying to do as a whole is create themes, and this will go for any future themes that we create that positively impact people and planet. And then we separate them out for the people that want them to be separated out. But the most common theme is the people and planet together. So we're looking at any area of the capital markets that can be constructed into a good theme that can address a problem, for example, like education or access to healthcare and things like that. So yeah, the overarching themes of people and planet are what we have on the platform today.
Great, thanks. And if, let's say, I really wanted to focus on climate change, could I do that within planet, or is planet more broad than that?
Yeah, planet is climate change, yes. And the areas that we're looking at within planet are clean energy, clean water, and sustainable food and agriculture. There are green bonds in there as well. We're working on probably adding some more areas within that, but it's a climate change specific theme, just in different sub areas. So if you wanted something like that was specifically clean energy, it's not that. It's kind of climate in multiple areas.
Some critics of the secondary investing space would argue that primary direct investment actually has a much larger impact. What would you say to counter this?
It's not that I would counter it, because I think there's a spectrum of impact, which, and I was actually talking about this earlier today with somebody, it's no doubt that if you invest the first capital an early stage company has ever had, and they spend it on, let's say, building an affordable home, and that's their business, that capital has had more direct impact than buying a stock on the stock market of a big company. There's no question about that. It's a spectrum. Now, the other thing I will say next is, most of the world's capital, however, because of liquidity reasons, has to be in listed markets around the world. How that applies to us is, because we're trying to get a generation of people to invest for the first time that have never invested before, we can't do it by getting them to put £200 a month in these highly illiquid, highly risky, likely to fail first-time businesses. It can't happen. So even though that is the deepest impact you could ever have, it's not the most appropriate thing for our customer base. So that's one element of it. The other element of it is, you need the full spectrum of impact in the world of capital markets, from really early stage to private equity to listed businesses, because if you don't, the ecosystem is incomplete. So when we're working at Wellington Management, what we saw was, unless you have a vibrant community of impact investors in listed markets, private impact businesses have less route to scale, because the reason why companies list on the stock market is so they can have more scale, basically, so they can raise funds to scale their operations, and there's more readily available capital. And what we've seen over and over again over the past, I would say, 10 years, is that the more vibrant the impact investment community is in listed markets, the more impact businesses have come to capital markets in the listed sector, because there's more of a path for them to raise capital. So there is a definitive impact from listed impact investing. It's nowhere near as deep as the other end of the spectrum, but it has to be there, because the bulk of the world capital is in listed markets. And the amount of change you can get from just nudging listed capital markets 1% to be more impactful is massive. It's absolutely colossal, because of the sheer amount of money that's there. And once you do that, the actual real world impact of doing that is this. There's loads of examples of this, but I'll give you, without naming the company, I'll give you an example. The more impact investment is driven towards companies, the more attention they get, the more their stock price rises generally, and the more capital they can raise at lower rates to expand their impact. So a specific example of that is, we used to invest in a company where, when we invested, we were the first non-domestic investor on the listed markets. And when we went in there, this is in one of my previous roles, because we went in and we were non-domestic, the investment banks started to cover that company from a research point of view. And in doing that, that attracted interest from other international investors. And in doing that, it drove the stock price up, and the company could raise more money to expand their operations and expand their impact. So whilst the impact is more nuanced in listed markets, it has to be there if we're going to solve these big problems that we all care about. And investing in the extreme kind of private early stage end is only ever going to be available truly to sophisticated and higher risk customers. So we have to open the world up of impact to the next generation, which is what we truly believe in. And that can only really, truly take place in the main part in listed markets, because it's the most appropriate for the customer. So it's a nuanced argument, but I think the spectrum has to be there. But there's no doubt, there's no question that the depth of impact increases the further you go down the spectrum. But because of the amount of capital we need to deploy, it can't all go there. It has to go through the spectrum. So it's all needed. Every single stage of it is needed.
You made a really valid point with the scalability element, and the company can start up in the private market, but obviously it needs to have investors who are interested in it in the public space also to enable it to raise more funds and grow its operations. It's a spectrum, and every part of this spectrum plays its role in helping companies to grow and generate more impact. Regarding your ETF providers for the app, how did you go about picking these, and how do you ensure that the ETFs you use are fully aligned with the themes you mentioned, like people and planet, that you propose to your investor base?
We don't necessarily pick the providers, but we pick the funds. So we do bottom-up due diligence on every single fund that is on the ticker platform. And we look specifically for ETFs. The main thing is to look at how the underlying index is created and what rules are created and what data sources they use to try and create an impactful ETF. And we scrutinize those, and we have a long due diligence process that we use for every single one to ensure that the index has integrity. And then we obviously look beyond the methodology and look at every single underlying holding in that index that creates the ETF and make sure that it's of a good quality from an impact point of view, from an impact data and impact measurement point of view. So that's how we operate today. But the real strength in the platform, I think, is going to grow over time. And one of those key areas is we're going to be building and launching our own ETFs so that in the future, the people and planet themes, for example, will be made up of all funds that we've created that will be ticker branded ETFs. And what that'll enable us to do is build every single ETF stock by stock from the ground up with impact first. So we don't have to use anyone's methodology. We use our own. And I think that's when we have the deepest impact possible on our platform, is by building and launching everything using our own impact methodology. So today we use the best in class that's available to us to create the overall themes. But in the next 12 to 18 months, you'll see us build our own so that we have the best in class that we can create ourselves.
That's really exciting. And when you, as you do now, you don't have your own ETFs yet, so you're picking the best ETFs. You mentioned the best in class. Is that yourself and Matt that's leading that, or do you have a specific team or individual who's part of the ticker team that is focused on that in particular?
Yeah, it's actually, we have an investment committee of four of us. It's mainly spearheaded by myself and Matt, but there's others on the team. And we're just hiring our first, outside of Matt and me, dedicated impact specialist for that. So they'll be in the team in the next 2 or 3 months, and they will help lead that process as we scale.
Great. Turning to B Corps, a bit of a switch. Ticker was recently awarded B Corp status in summer last year.
Yeah.
And for our listeners who might not know what a B Corp is, could you please expand on this and what it means for Ticker?
Yeah, so the way the analogy I would use for it is it's like the FCA regulation process for financial services businesses in the UK. It's like that, but for businesses that are positive impact. So the process in some ways was harder than getting the FCA license because of how rigorous it is. So they really study your product, your supply chain, your employees, if your employees own equity, how they're treated. It's a certification or eventually probably be some form of regulation that is trying to identify the most impactful businesses around the world. And we wanted to go through it as a kind of stamp of approval to solidify the things that we already stood for and that we were talking about and saying that we were. Because I think what will happen in the future is B Corps will become the thing that everyone wants to be because it's the industry standard or the gold standard of positive impact. And I think it's a huge credibility stamp for us as a business because it kind of proves that an external, reputable third party agrees that what we're doing is good for the world, from the way we treat our staff to the way we power our offices to the underlying investments in our product. And I think it just enshrines in a certification all the things that we stand for and have stood for. So I think you've actually seen in the past year, they've had so many applications from companies that they've had to kind of pause awarding them or at least delay them because it's becoming the thing that everyone's gravitating to. And I think that's just going to continue. So I think it will be seen as like a regulation, an FCA regulation for who's positive impact. So you won't be able to say you are really without it, something like that.
Do you think that it might develop into similar, as you said about impact investing, just becoming investing? Do you think that it will just become the norm as opposed to something that sets you above potential other peers in the marketplace?
Would it become the norm? I think it will become desired, and it already is desired. Whether it will become the norm or not, I'm not entirely sure in the next 5-10 years. I think it will become more and more popular. And I think it will give a lot of companies an idea of a framework of what they needed to do to be classified as positive impact. Because if you don't get through the certification, they give you areas that you need to prove or improve at to get to it. So I don't see it as a problem. More people getting it, I see it as a benefit for the world. And I don't think it'll be a risk to us as small businesses get it. I think us being out early, being amongst the first, I think we'll be the first investment app to get the B Corp status, I think. And yeah, I don't see a problem with other people getting it. In fact, I encourage it because it's better for the world.
That makes a lot of sense. And touching on something else which has become more popular recently is carbon offsetting. Mm. And another feature of Ticker is that it provides its users with the possibility to offset their carbon emissions. And you actually, as a company, also offset your carbon emissions to the point that you are climate positive, which sounds a bit suspect, but could you expand on this, please?
Yeah, the climate positive thing is mainly just we calculated our scope 1, 2, 3 emissions and we twice offset the footprint. So instead of just doing one times, we did it two times to be doubly sure that we were taking care of our footprint. We don't have a physical supply chain or anything like that. So it's mainly about our employees and how we work in the office and that kind of thing. So that was the climate positive thing. And that's why we did that. Yeah, the subscription thing. So I'll talk for a second about how the platform is developing. So what we stand for is having a positive impact. And one of the ways in which to do that is to invest in companies that are providing for a better future. But what we want to be predominantly in the next few years' time is the single most convenient place where people come to positively impact the world. And investing is one of those ways, but it's not limited to that. So the first expression of that is with carbon offsetting. So we calculate our customers' carbon footprint, and then we offset it for them by funding UN gold standard carbon projects around the world, and then we retire the credits from circulation. And the idea is that in the future, we do three things together, which I think is powerful. We get our customers to invest in the solutions to the problems they care about, good for them and good for everyone else. We suggest ways in which they can bring their direct footprint down by changing their expenditure, and then we offset the rest. And I think that together as an idea, as like a total impact platform, is quite powerful. And that's the direction of travel that we're going in.
That's great. I think it's really valid to have more of a holistic approach to impact. And obviously, it's not just through your money that consumers can drive impact and change. It's also in behavioural changes. So exactly. That sounds really valuable. Just coming to the point of conclusion, do you have any words of advice for listeners who might be interested in launching their own startup or just in general getting into the impact investment space?
Yeah, the startup thing is interesting because I was never necessarily driven explicitly by just starting a company. It was because we genuinely saw something that we thought needed to be built, and then we just did it. What I mean by that is I wouldn't have just left to start any company. I wouldn't have just left to do anything. It was impact investing. It was accessibility that I personally felt like I needed to do. And that drive has enabled me to, during the times where it's not going well, because it's incredibly difficult to start a company from scratch and get it off the ground and get it being used by people and generating revenue and scaling. It's hard in different ways all along the journey. And the thing that keeps you going is the underlying passion for the thing that you're building. So don't just start a business because you want to start a business. That's the wrong idea. Start it because you have something that you need to get out and that you need to be built. And it's not right for everybody because it's not easy. It's way easier to just stay and work in a corporate environment. So yeah, that would be a piece of advice. Another piece of advice would be don't do it alone. You need a co-founder that you trust with your life. And I think if me and Matt hadn't had each other, we'd be nowhere near where we are today. So, and it's fortunate that Matt and I had known each other for like 8 years at the point we left our jobs to do this. But work with someone you trust 100%, because that'll help you. Even it'll just help you share the workload. It'll help you bounce ideas. It'll help you get through some tough times. And then impact investing specifically, it's never been easier to get into impact investing than now. When I first got into it, in the listed space, it wasn't really used as a term, and it was hard to get into it. But now every big asset manager has an impact strategy. But if I was someone coming up now, I wouldn't go and work at a big asset manager with an impact strategy. I'd go and work at a dedicated impact investment management company, because you get to work in an environment where everyone believes in it and you're all pulling in the same direction. And it's not just one thing that the company does, it's everything. So that's what I would advise.
Thanks. That's really good food for thought, I'm sure, for all our listeners. Finally, if you wanted our listeners to take away one thing from this episode of the IB Green Minds podcast, what would you want it to be?
That investing collectively as a generation or beyond that is one of the biggest ways in which we can influence the world. You can influence the world where you buy things and where you put your savings and pension. So think about your money in that way, and we can go a long way towards solving and making progress on the solutions that we all care about.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Tom, for your time. Thank you for all of your insights and for joining me on this episode of the IB Green Minds podcast. It's been great to have you on.
I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.